Hey, drama listeners. This is Dylan checking in before this episode with Jack Malone, just to say hi, first of all, but also to let you know about Drama Plus, which is Connor and I's bonus content platform where you can get even more drama. Hundreds of bonus episodes at this point. We release two of those a month over on Drama Plus, as well as you get to be on our Instagram close friends for drama. And it's a good time. Now, this episode with Jack Malone is so much fun. It's essentially this exit interview for Jack, who has won a Tony, Olivier, all the awards for being in Operation Mincemeat. And it's an amazing chat. If you are a Mincemeat stan, then definitely check out our episode with Natasha Hodgson, which came out last summer, where we learned all about the creation of the show and some of the more specific nitty-gritty things about the writing process and what the transfer from the West End to Broadway has been like. We love you, Tash. Now, listen, y'all. For those of you who are in Ohio or anywhere near Ohio, I do also want to make a plug for a production of Spring Awakening that is happening in the Cleveland area at the Beck Center for the Arts. It's a collaboration with Oberlin College and the Conservatory Music Theater Program. Y'all, get into it. It's running through March 1st. It is absolutely incredible. I saw the Beltane cast, but I'm sure everyone is absolutely stellar. The choreography, oh my God. You know, it wouldn't be drama without Spring Awakening. You all know this. We're obsessed. We've had so many of the original and revival and tour cast members on our show, and seeing this production at the Beck Center was amazing. In fact, I mean, a decade plus ago, Connor and I saw our second ever guest of drama, Zach Adkins, star in the Baldwin Wallace Music Theater collaboration with Beck Center as Melchior. And Kira Kennedy was Venla, and it was an amazing time. And Hunter and I went over the weekend, and it was a really amazing, nostalgic, energizing, dark, mysterious, dare I say, iconic production. So y'all need to go and get your tickets. They have student tickets. Do what you got to do to see this production if you live in the Cleveland area. All right. All things Spring Awakening aside, Drama Plus aside, let's get on to the show with the amazing Jack Malone.
Press play. Curtain up and now we're in. It's time to take a spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, how are you? How was your long weekend?
It was amazing. You know, we're getting closer and closer to my wedding. We're 12 days away from the time of recording. And so I'm oddly calm.
I love it. It's so surreal. I cannot believe you're getting married. Like, it's crazy.
Well, 2 years ago was the engagement. So it's just been a long period of like planning and waiting and trying to lose weight and, you know, all of the above. But here we are.
I know. Oh, my God. Well, wait, did you have a chance to start the love story show, the JFK Jr. and Carolyn Bessette?
I only watched the first episode, but okay. How many episodes came out?
They dropped three. What's it with these shows dropping like three episodes and then like they go weekly from there? It's kind of wild.
They want to hook you.
They do. I guess so. Wait, it's so good, isn't it?
Yeah, I really love it.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed. It's so, like the 90s New York vibe in general is just so amazing. I'm hooked on that. But then, I mean, their love story is so compelling.
It is. I mean, I think a big part of it, though, is how amazing Sarah Pidgeon is. I'm absolutely obsessed with. Obviously, we all fell in love with her during Stereophonic. And it just makes sense that she's now a stage and screen crossover actress. She's literally so stunning.
Oh my God.
But also just you can't look away. She's perfection. Emmy winner to be.
Emmy winner to be for sure. But Paul Anthony Kelly, who plays her lover, JFK Jr., he's so hot.
Oh yeah, I knew you'd be. He's made in a lab for you.
I
for
know.
Sure.
His hair, when he wears like the baseball caps and, oh my God.
Yeah.
They were fashion icons, the two of them.
Yeah. I like that it's also educational too. So I'm learning a little bit.
Wait, and Naomi Watts is Jackie. Camp.
It's so funny to watch something about our version of what I would say is like royalty. It's like almost like in the UK, they obviously have, you know, the crown, things like that. I wonder if people you know, if people who aren't from America view it in the same way. Well, maybe we can find out in a minute or
Oh,
two.
interesting. That's a really interesting thought. Well, because originally it was called American Love Story, but they dropped American from the title. I think because they want to take it international.
Well, it's Charles and Diana next, obviously.
Well, I was thinking maybe Meghan and Harry at some point. They'll probably want to do.
Okay,
They're kind of
maybe
boring.
so.
Anyway, whatever. Okay, Dylan, I'm so excited about our guest.
Speaking of iconic Brits, you know, in the line of Meghan and Harry and, you know, all of that, we have an absolute star with us today.
International superstar. Tony
Yes.
winner.
And we're already having a lovely time. Our guest today is a Tony and Olivier Award-winning performer, currently starring in Operation Mincemeat on Broadway. For his extraordinary turn as Hester and other characters, he has been recognized with Drama Desk, Outer Critics Circle, Dorian, and Theatre World Awards. Before crossing the pond, lucky audiences in the United Kingdom saw him on stage in Sondheim on Sondheim, Spies Are Forever, and A Clockwork Orange. This star made their cabaret debut on New Year's Eve at the Laurie Beachman Theater, is now a double dog parent, and even has a Substack. On February 22nd, he will step on stage at the John Golden Theater for the final time alongside his original castmates and stars of Operation Mincemeat. And we're all already crying. Please welcome to drama,
Jack
Jack Malone.
Malone. Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Welcome, Jack, and your new dog.
Yes, you can probably hear little doggy feet. They're just going out for a walk, so they're very excited.
Oh, so cute. Okay, wait,
So
so
cute.
you famously have Dracula,
Dracula is my boy.
and now welcome to the family.
And now we have Phantom. Phantom. And he came with the name Phantom. We didn't even choose that. That's what he came with.
You're
Meant to
joking.
be.
Yeah,
Absolutely meant
yeah.
to be.
Yeah,
Oh.
we have to keep him. There was no question. We also thought about changing it. We were shopping some names. We nearly called him Casper. And then I said, listen, we've got Phantom, we've got Dracula. It's too perfect. We shouldn't mess with it. We should just leave it.
Yeah.
I know. Well, because Dracula, I mean, obviously Cynthia Erivo is the other Dracula right now over in the West
I
End.
know. Yeah, she stole his gig. He's quite
I'm
upset.
sure. You know, I feel like he can reclaim the crown.
His fangs are real. This is the problem, you know. She's appropriating. That's what she's doing.
Will you see Cynthia when you return home in a few weeks?
Oh, I can't wait. It's very high on my agenda is to go and see that show. I love Kip Williams, the director. I was very fortunate enough throughout my time here and through award season to be able to befriend him, and I'm just so obsessed. I saw Dorian Gray and I voice noted him and said, I will play a doorknob in a production that you make. And he said the only way that you would play a doorknob is if the production was called The Doorknob. And I was like,
Wow.
Kip, that was so cool. I love that. So yeah, I'm desperate to see it. That and Paddington, that little tiny cuddly little bear. That I'm coming for you, Paddington. I'm on my way.
Wait, I'm so obsessed. I heard some of the songs. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I think it's going to sweep over there. I think people just love it. I don't. I've not seen a single person who has a bad word to say about it.
Wow.
I think they've really nailed it. So I'm very excited to get there and see that.
Because the
Yeah.
Olivier's will happen in like the next month or so, right? Or 2 months.
April, they usually hit, yeah.
Okay. Just a
Yeah.
little bit before Tony's and everything. God, it's crazy to think that a year ago now you had moved here to premiere Operation Mincemeat on Broadway and you're about to say goodbye to it. Before we jump into all of that, Jack, we do want to check in with you and just see how you're doing. Are you well?
I'm as well as can be, considering that I have absolutely had the most glorious love affair with this city. And I am now getting ready. I'm packing up. There's literally boxes in the screen behind me. I'm packing up and getting ready to leave. I'm applying for my green card so I can hopefully come back and work. But until then, I'll be home. I'm looking forward to being home. I'm really excited to see all my friends, see all my family. But this city really has took hold. So yeah, I'm as well as I can be. This is going to be an emotional week. I'm sort of bubbling up. I'm starting low and getting ready for, I'm sure, what will be a day of tears on Sunday.
Oh my God, I can't even imagine. So when you go back to the UK, where do you call home over there?
So I've lived in London since 2019, but when I go back, I'm going to visit Merseyside first, which is where I'm from. So I'm going to go there. I'm going to spend some time with family. I'm going to stay at my grandma's house for like a month, we think.
Aww.
We're sort of giving ourselves that time to buffer, get back to normality a little bit before we make our way back to London. We're just giving ourselves some space. I know that there's a lot of people who are heading back are like stressing, trying to find somewhere to live in London and doing like virtual viewings and stuff. And I'm like, let's show ourselves a bit of grace and give ourselves some time.
Yes.
So that's what we're going to do. Yeah.
You've more than earned it. Now, is this the grandma who has been mentioned in speeches?
So, I sort of mentioned them both equally, but you know,
Okay.
this is my nanny Lone. We call her nanny Lone because it's Malone. And she gets mentioned a hell of a lot because she worked as a dresser at my local big touring house theater. And she was the reason that I got to see so much theater. So she's sort of responsible for much of what's happened. And then I referenced my other nan, my nanny Joan, in my Olivier Awards speech. And again, if, whenever asked, because she, after I was inspired to do theater and to sort of pursue it, seeing how much joy it brought her was a big motivating factor for me to really go for it and to really work hard and to keep. I she was just never happier than when I was in a show and she could be there every night. And even I remember car rides home with her just being joyous and seeing her joyous. And she could appear stern. This was the thing about her, is some people thought that she wasn't very joyful, but I knew her to be incredibly joyful. So I think that's why I think there's a big part of me that's still just doing it to impress my nan.
That's so sweet.
Oh.
Is she still with us?
No, she passed away. She's been gone. I think it's like 14 years, long time, but it doesn't feel like it for me. It's like there's still this sort of little thing within me. Whenever something good does happen, I think, oh, I can't wait to catch up. We have to catch up about that. It's like this sort of weird little. Anytime something good happens, there's a little tinge of, oh no, fuck. One more thing that I can't tell her. Sorry, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear.
That's okay. You can swear.
All you'd like. Yes.
Bleep me.
Did you two share any favorite musicals or plays together?
Yeah, so the Phantom of the Opera was really quite seminal for me because I've always loved horror. That's why I've got two dogs called Dracula and Phantom. I've always loved horror. I've always been drawn to the spooky. So she, I remember one day she had a tape of it, a cassette tape, and she played it, and I was like, just the sort of all the spooky music, all the dissonant chords, and so I thought, oh wow, this is really exciting. So that was the first West End show that I ever saw.
Ooh.
She and my granddad took me. We went on a coach trip on a big coach, and we went and saw Phantom of the Opera. And then I think like 3 months later, she said, "We can do that London trip again if you'd like. We can look at seeing something else." And I said, "Let's go, but let's see Phantom again." So we did. We went. We saw it again. So I've always had this sort of love for Phantom. I'm glad I saw it in London. In I think last time I saw it was 2024.
Okay, like the retooled version that they.
Yeah, slightly. To me, it wasn't. I think, you know, the hardcore fans with a PH fans.
Right.
They will have had comments, but I hadn't seen it in a while, and I thought, oh, it's still very much the same flavor. So I got to see that, and I thought, I'm glad that it still is there and it still exists. I just think there's something special about it. And then I just got to see Masquerade 2 weeks ago, and I
I was
was
gonna
blown
ask.
away. Oh my goodness, what an incredible piece of storytelling! I loved it, and yeah, I was thinking of Nanny Joan the whole time. She was very close to my mind. Because I was thinking, God, her mind would be blown at this. This is crazy.
Oh, that's so
That's so
beautiful.
nice.
And of course, now you have Phantom with you all the
Yeah,
time.
I know.
So,
It's a nice little bit of kismet that it can all sort of link back. It's lovely.
yes. Now, are there other horror musicals? I'm trying to think of, like, because we have Carrie probably would be considered a horror musical. Are there any others you can think of?
It's horror is a hard medium to crack in musicals, and I think this is going to sound like the most name-droppy showbizzy thing, but it's interesting that this was the conversation, right? I was at Anna Wintour's house, right? We're starting there, okay?
Right,
Every
right.
everybody get ready. I was at Anna Wintour's house and we were having dinner, and Michael Arden was sat opposite, and we got talking about Anna was asking me about horror, and she said, "Well, what's the situation with horror musicals?" And we ended up having this really, really interesting discussion that I wish we'd have recorded. And we all came to the conclusion that horror is hard to do in musical theatre, at least, because for horror, you're asking the audience to suspend disbelief. And for musicals, you're also asking the audience to suspend disbelief. And the sort of stacking of suspension of disbelief makes things quite difficult. So that's why horror musicals tend to be awkward. I mean, Carrie is one of the biggest, most
Yeah.
notorious flops. Phantom is technically a horror. I'm on record as saying I hope one day they let me direct a production of it where I can really ramp up the horror and have the audience believe in that he could be a real ghost.
Ooh.
I just think when I saw it last, I thought, oh yeah, They really, they, it's so early on when you see him in the mirror and he's just a handsome guy in a suit. And I'm like, oh no, that's not when I would reveal him. I think I would wait all the way until his All I Ask of You reprise.
Oh.
You will curse that bit. I'd wait until then to reveal that it's actually just a man. I'd have the audience thinking that it could be a ghost the whole time.
Oh my goodness.
That
well, I'm glad
is
that we've
amazing.
Recorded this idea now because no one can steal it.
No,
we can put
no,
the date on it.
That's
yes.
mine. That's mine.
Wait, I need you to play the Phantom or Christine.
Oh, please. Somebody said, because Jeff Crady, who's coming in to mince me to take over from me, has just left Masquerade. And somebody commented saying, well, hopefully we could do a switch and Jack could go into Masquerade, preferably as Carlotta. And I said, yeah, I'll do it. Fine. You've got
yes.
me. When she strides into the dressing room with that turban on, I was like, yeah, I'll do that. That's fine.
Amazing. That's so
now,
good.
You mentioned horror in musical theater, but I'm hearing all this buzz about this Paranormal Activity play that's also in the West End.
Yeah, that's another one that's on my list. I can't wait to go to that. But apparently it's great.
Yeah.
I've seen, so horror theater, horror musical theater is hard. Horror theater is not. Horror theater is very doable and very good and very fun.
Yes.
I'm dying to do some horror theater. It would combine everything.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. We need you in 222 A Ghost Story.
Yeah, happily. My favorite piece of horror theater is a show called Ghost Stories. I don't know if it's ever come over here. It really should.
I don't think so.
Maybe I'll make some calls.
Yeah.
It's an anthology play. It's a professor giving a lecture about ghost stories and why they make us feel the way they do and why they make us scared. And he's a parapsychologist. He studies the paranormal, but he debunks it. He's a skeptic. And he says, but there are three stories that I have that I've never been able to explain. And then the three stories are played out for you. And it's terrifying. It's so scary and so well done. There's a movie of it as well. The movie's excellent.
Okay.
It's just called Ghost
okay.
Stories. It's terrific. It's well worth the watch.
Oh, that might be too scary for me. Horror is like, I have nightmares.
Yeah.
I really do.
I love it though.
Yeah,
so
me too.
I'm definitely going to check it out.
Yeah, you must. It's great.
You know, we ask all of our guests about the moment that they got into the arts. We borrow a ring of keys from Fun Home. And as you were talking about your grandmothers, I was wondering if maybe they... Obviously, they had an impact on your theatrical tastes and experiences. But do you feel like you had another Ring of Keys moment or something that happened where you were like, oh my God, I need to be a part of the arts?
Yeah. So there's two. The first one is directly related to my nanny Loan, she's the one who worked at the theater. And that meant I got to see things for free. The very first thing I went to see was Play Days Live. So there was a kids' TV show called Play Days. I don't even remember what the show was about or what it entailed, but I remember getting to see Play Days Live. There was often a situation there where if she was babysitting me, she would be called into work and she'd say, well, I'm going to bring my grandson. So I would get left at the lighting box or the sound box or somewhere. I'd get left with someone while the show was on, and then she'd come and get me at the end. So I remember watching this. One of my favorite TV shows on a stage in front of me, and she came to collect me at the end, and I asked her if she could rewind it. And that to me is so indicative of what theater did and can do. Like I still have that now. I still see things and think, oh, I went to see maybe Happy Ending, and I thought, let's go again. Like I could go again. That was wonderful.
Yeah.
And then the other one, which I've never ever talked about this before, and it was only yesterday when I was thinking about this prompt that I remembered this. I was watching television as a child one day, and there was a TV show called Blue Peter, which was like this, it was a kid's TV show where they talked about history and art and literature and stuff. And it was like an informational kid's TV show. It was sort of pop culture, but through children's lens. And I remember, I think it was on that show, I remember there being a segment, and all the segment was, it was an actor who was in a pantomime, a British pantomime, putting his makeup on, getting into costume to play a dame. So a pantomime dame is a man who plays a woman. And the joke usually is, oh my goodness, what an ugly woman, which I have my opinions about in 2026, but there we are. But I remember this clip. It was this VT of him. There was music playing and he went through every stage. He did his bass, he did his cheeks, he put his eyelashes on, the costume, the sort of padding, the wig. I remember it. And I remember thinking, wow. What a, like, and you just get to go in and you just get to do that. You get to like dress up professionally. I remember being like floored by that and realizing that not only is theatre cool and I've been there watching it, loving it all my life, but also it is a day-to-day job for people and people have a process and they go in and they just make they just make that character happen every night. That's cool. So I knew I wanted to do that.
So cute. I mean, also like a profound realization that maybe you can explore other parts of your identity through theater.
That too. That had to be part of it. The child that I was, obsessed with sparkle and texture and color and wigs and all that stuff, I think that was also a big part of it, that I was like, huh, this we've gone from the masculine to the feminine. Interesting.
Yes.
I love that. And were your family encouraging of you exploring your interests, whether it be putting on wigs or singing and dancing?
Yeah. Again, Nanny Joan, incredibly like impactful and supportive. If I watched something, I remember we watched Aladdin, the Disney version. I'd never seen it. She had the cassette, we put it on. And then I remember we spent the whole rest of that day cobbling together a genie costume through things that were in the house. So I'm sure I was wearing a blue blouse and like a bobble in my hair. Like we cobbled together this genie costume, and I got to be the genie for the rest of the day. So this was in my house, imagination, creativity, play, dress up was encouraged. And rightfully so, I think it still serves me well to this day. I think much of what I was doing back then to play, just in play, I still implement now. I still, I'm not one of those actors that's like, I have to really feel it. We're doing an emotional scene together, and in the meantime, I have to be scanning my brain for this sad thing that happened to me 10 years ago. I don't do that. I just play it. So I think, yeah, a lot of that stuff from childhood is still serving me well today, and I love my family for that.
I really love to hear that. Now, have you ever done a panto?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Not professionally. I used to do them as a child. So we used to do one every year with the youth theater that I was involved with. So I've done many, and they always had like a theme musically that would then be applied to a pantomime. So we did Snow White. And we did Snow White and the Fab Four, and it was to the music of the Beatles.
So fun.
My favorite example of this was Jacko and the Beanstalk, which was the story of Jack and the Beanstalk set to the music of Michael Jackson.
Wow.
That's clever. Honestly.
They were, honestly, the way they'd come up with them all and link it all together. Like, for example, I played Jacko's mom, and I'm saying, take the cow to market and bring back money. And don't stop until you get enough. And then I'd sing, don't stop till you get enough. Isn't that good?
So good. That's so that good. It's like perfect, actually.
I know. They did every year. They'd write a panto that was based around some music. And they'd nail it every time. Good fun.
That's so cool. We were in London a few years ago. We saw Ian McKellen do Mother Goose. And it was
amazing. What a treat. Yeah. Oh, wasn't he wonderful?
Yes. Yeah. So good. Yeah. That was our first panto experience, because obviously we don't have them here.
So it's kind of unheard of. One of the sort of, I think, brilliant things about panto is that they hire, I was going to say actors, but I can't even say actors. Sometimes it is just TV or media personalities to be in these shows. And you end up with these really unique casts. You just end up with these people that you would never otherwise see on stage. But then someone as revered and well-respected and an A-lister like Ian McKellen would never do a pantomime. But he has so much love for the art form of theatre in all of its forms that he didn't think that beneath him at all. He was like, he'd done it years ago and he was doing it again. He was like, no, it's important. It's a very, very old form of what we're all doing, and we should still go back and we should still honour it. And he was just magnificent.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I mean, that's why we went, because we were like, oh my gosh, well, he's in it. Mm. So like, let's check it out. I'm hoping it brought in a lot of audiences. And there was like a TV presenter. I'm because you saw it, Jack, right? There was the whoever played opposite him.
I don't remember what this. Yeah, they it's sometimes it's like ex-Love Island contestants. Uh-huh. Sometimes like we have a TV judge called Judge Rinder. Judge Rinder usually will do a panto. People like that. And I think it absolutely has its place. You create these very weird combinations that you have to enjoy. You've got no choice but to go, well, yeah, Judge Rinder is opposite Ian McKellen. This is going to be interesting.
Oh my gosh. Well, Jack, we talked about how this is your last week of Operation Mincemeat. You've been working on this show for years, years and years and years. And you said it's kind of bubbling up, the feelings, as you're leading up to your final show on Sunday. But Talking specifically about the New York experience of Operation Mincemeat, do you have any highlights from this past year from doing the show and getting to be a part of the Broadway community?
Yeah, awards season is a huge highlight. And not for the reason, not for the awards.
It was nice to win one.
Sure. I was warned pre-award season because my stamina with this show is on a knife's edge. The show is so hard, particularly vocally. I'm the secret alto of the show. Truly, the notes that I agreed to do 7 years ago are not the notes that I would agree to do today. So it's incredibly hard for me. So I was warned pre-award season, listen, this is really going to take its toll. You have to look after yourself. You have to try and eat well, get plenty of sleep, electrolytes, vitamins, everything. You have to really try your best. And I sort of had mentally prepared myself for that. And then I got into the thick of it. And we've got these events and galas and press junkets and we're performing here and we're appearing there and we're being interviewed. And I loved it. I just adored it. I just had the most terrific, fun time. Mainly because I got to meet everybody. It was the community. We all gathered. We all had to gather. This is what we were doing. The whole point of it is that we've got to be seen. We've got to be out and about. Even though we've got this big, giant thing to do later this evening, we've got to be seen. So I met heroes of mine. I got to see Stephen Schwartz sing For Good to Idina Menzel, on just him at the piano. And I was just like, this 14-year-old me is in the room screaming. Like that was amazing. I did the Tony's press day and I was being led around by Evie, who's one of our press agents. And suddenly I'm facing one way, and suddenly the other way, somebody is shaking my hand. And I look to see who's at the end of my hand, and it's Bob Odenkirk. And he says, "Hi, big fan." I said, "What are you talking about?" I told him to shut up. I went, "Shut up, Bob Odenkirk." I said, "You don't get to just come over and say, 'Hi, big fan.' I'm a big fan of you. How dare you just say that?" So he's one of my all times. He's an incredible performer. And he started in comedy, and I just think he's one of our best. For that to happen, and things like that happened a lot. "Hi, big fan. Don't be so ridiculous." we can't just start. This can't be life now, can it? So that to me has been the biggest highlight. And then the other side of that was everybody saying to me, "Oh, you'll be glad when this finishes, because then you'll get to rest. You could just do the show." And I remember at the time thinking, I don't think I'm going to be glad when this finishes. And literally the week after the Tony's happened, and then that following week was when I went, right, I'm homesick. And I hadn't missed home at all. Now I'm homesick. Now I'm tired, because I hadn't been tired, because it kept me going. It fueled me. Now I am. And now I'm facing just this, doing the rest of this year with no more Bob Odenkirk. So that was this incredible, unique, amazing thing. And I'm really, really grateful for it, to really have been able to engage with the community and feel part of it. That was incredibly important. I'm glad that got to happen.
Right. And you're part of it now, Jack. It was such a delight to see everyone embrace you and your castmates of Operation Mincemeat, but you deserved every single accolade and award that came your way, because what you do in Operation Mincemeat is a miracle on stage. It's truly a revelation. And
thank you.
Particularly, I'm talking about, you know, your Dear Bill number and Hester, which is sort of the talked about moment for you a lot of the time. Have you learned anything from Hester and that character that you'll take with you?
Yeah, it's reaffirmed a lot of things that I thought I knew. One is that Hester is the kind of person who, we all know this person, we've all met this person. They will walk into any given space, a workplace, a trip, a group outing, and they'll say, "I'm not here to make any friends, I'm not here to have any fun." No, don't even try. And of course that's nonsense. And of course that is defense mechanism and its affectation, and they have to try very hard to have no fun, because as humans we want to laugh and we want to commune and we want to bond. And when I got given the role of Hester, I immediately knew, oh, she's one of those people. And I love those people, because I make it my mission to crack them. You have to find the right thing, you have to tickle them in the right spot, and I knew that was who Hester was. So getting to embody that person, because I'm not like that. I walk into any given room and I'm like, right, let's all be best friends. here's 10 things to complain about. I think complaining really unites people. So I always come in with some complaints.
Oh, yeah.
Hester, I sort of reaffirmed that these are people out there who think that not making any friends anywhere they go is the right thing to do. And it's just not. And we have to give them space and patience and don't write anybody off. And I think I enjoy that with Hester. Every night I step out and I do that first scene where she's so picky and she's a fuddy-duddy and she has all these rules and I watch the audience go, oh, this is going to be a fun character. We're going to have some fun here. You know, there's going to be a lot of fun at her expense. I sort of see that energy. And then I deliver Dear Bill and they go, oh no, okay. They've completely blindsided us with all of the emotion in the world that this woman has been hiding. And the other thing that it's sort of taught me and reaffirmed is that when it comes to gender, it's very, very simple. It's a lot simpler than we need to make it. If you just take somebody at their word and at their vibes and at their energy that they bring, we would all have a nicer time. Where, you know, I step out onto the stage and declare myself a woman, and I'm wearing big trousers and a dress shirt with a little bit of frill on it. I've got a curl in my hair, but it's mainly posture, voice, and energy. And because it's a theater, and you know, we've just talked about panto, and there's these rules, and one of the rules is that it's safe to go along with that. People do. People go, yeah, great. I'll accept you for who you've said you are. And not only will I accept you, but I will cry. I will root for you. I will cry for you. And sometimes I wonder if, you know, we're seeing 800 people a night go through that journey with me. And I can't help but wonder whether all of those 800 people would take that energy to the streets. And I hope that maybe that experience with the show might linger in the back of their mind. We're not out there preaching to people. We don't end the show and go, and look, it was a man and you didn't care. But I do hope that they might take what they felt that night and go, oh, okay, yeah, maybe it is that simple. Because I think it is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I also love the pilot character too.
Me too. He's great fun. He's my little Easter egg about him is sometimes I do stage door and people say, your accent was great as that character. And I say, oh, bless you. No, it wasn't. I deliberately, as a treat for me, listen, when you've done a show as long as this, you entertain yourself where you can. And as a treat for myself, as a big accent nerd, I decided to make him from everywhere in America because he's a British vision of an American pilot. None of our central characters meet him. So I decided that I think his base accent is sort of Midwestern. And then I push and I pull. I go towards the South. I go very New York. There's even a little bit of transatlantic in there. I do a Jimmy Stewart impression. Jeez Louise! Like I was like, how can I make this the most all-American man that you could ever know? So that's what I do with him. And it's really, really great. And then people say, oh, that accent was great. And I think maybe you heard yourself represented for a moment or two. And it's tricked you into thinking I was doing something authentic when really it's a joke. It's just a joke for me.
Yes. And it just goes to show everything that you were just saying about what people should be maybe taking away when they're watching you as Hester. It also applies to when you're playing the pilot too.
Yeah.
You know, people will take things, they'll identify things. And I think that it's really powerful. And I really appreciate everything that you had to say just about sort of this subtle messaging that you're pushing out there with the show, because it's obviously touched so many people in the fan base. What is the fan base of Operation Mincemeat called, by the way?
The Mincefluencers.
Mincefluencers.
Yeah, it's great. Listen, you can't, we could never have predicted, because the reason they're called Mincefluencers is because their whole MO is to bring people. Could you imagine a fan base of a show whose entire purpose of being is to encourage others to see the show? It's producers couldn't pay for that kind of marketing, guerrilla on the ground marketing, but they do. They come back, they bring 10 friends, those 10 friends bring 10 friends, and they are responsible for how awful my knees are, because I've had to do the show for so bloody long, because they keep getting, making it go further.
Yes. And that's so interesting too, thinking about the idea of fandom, because I think oftentimes there's a lot of gatekeeping that happens in specific fandoms, and they don't, it's like, this is my secret. I don't want the whole world to know about it. But I love that. It's because this show has such a wide appeal, despite being about such a specific and niche thing.
Yeah. There's never been any gatekeeping, because I think a lot of it is to do with us and the team behind the show. I think they root for us so strongly and so beautifully. I think it's always been, no, we can't keep this to ourselves. We have to share this with the world, because they kind of want the best for the show and the team behind it. And that's so nice. I call them are good army. They're just a little army for good. They love a stunt. They love to make things happen. They love to surprise us. And it's always wonderful and joyous. They're all artists. I get given the most glorious pieces of art and that I just adore. They've been like one of the single greatest things to bubble up around this show has been the wonderful community that's come up around it. So a couple of them recently got engaged. And the first message I got was, "Are you ordained?" And I am. So was it 12 days that you're getting married? Hey, double check with me just in case your officiant drops out, because I can do it. But only in America. I'm ordained in America. I'm not ordained in the UK.
Oh, how funny is that? I might take you up on that, Jack.
Have you officiated any weddings with this?
No. I do you know what it was? I got an email. It was a few months ago. I got an email to say, "Congratulations on your 10-year anniversary of being ordained." And I said, "Wow, it was 10 years ago." And it's because a friend of mine in the UK had asked if I would conduct their wedding. And I said, yeah, let me look into it. And I looked and I went on this website and I was like, literally getordained.com. I went on and I got ordained. And then it said, "You are now an ordained minister of the Universal Life Church of America." And I was like, oh, so I looked into it and it turns out I'm not ordained in the UK. So I've just had this, I've just been able to conduct weddings for 10 years and haven't done a single one.
That's too good. I love it. But Jack, you mentioned that all of the Mints, the Good Army, are incredible artists. I was in doing research on you for this chat. I learned that you also, you know, produced some artwork that got the attention of your now co-stars and friends in the first place. What were you creating and how did you even like meet them in the first place?
So yeah, I'm an artist. I still am. I always say I have to be creative or else I'll die. I truly believe it. I have to produce something all the time when I'm not working in theater. I mean, even now, like in, you know, I'll do the show. I'm doing the show at night and I'm writing musicals by day. I'm constantly producing. I have to, otherwise I'll shrivel up. So back then I was always creating art about whatever I wanted. I've never had one specific medium or way I like to work. And I went to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which if you haven't been, you must go. It's just one of the most creatively nourishing things you can ever do.
Bucket list for sure.
Oh, you must. It's wonderful. And I saw this play called He Had Hairy Hands. And it was a horror comedy werewolf play that was written by some of the writers of Operation Mincemeat and a couple of their other collaborators. They had this company called Kill the Beast. And I saw this play and it was a revelation. I was like, oh, this is exactly what I want to do. And it's very in keeping with what we do at Mincemeat. It's anyone can play any gender. It's broad, cartoonish comedy, but it had like horror at its roots. So I really loved it. So I immediately went away and I made a poster for them. I just as fan art, just I wanted to take the sort of old 70s horror movies that they'd homaged and use that style and make a poster for them. So I did. Then I saw another play that they did called Don't Wake the Damp. And it was about a tower block where the damp was actually a tentacled monster that was coming up to consume the building. And I made a sci-fi, 80s sci-fi poster for them. And I started doing that. I started doing little character things. They had this podcast, this like supernatural mystery podcast. And I made a Scooby-Doo style Hanna-Barbera poster for them. And they loved that and ended up asking me if they could buy that and use that as their real poster, which they did. And then they've done specials of that podcast and I've done the key art for them now that I know them. So yeah, that got their attention in the first instance. And that was, my intention was never to be like, let's get in their face. Let's show them who I am. Maybe I was like, I want to be on their radar as someone that when I do meet them, they can go, oh, you're that guy. But it was also just, this is my response to the fucking cool thing that you've made. And I want to give you something. So when it came time, when Mincemeat was announced and they held these open auditions, I went in and they knew me as a fan. They were like, oh, this is the fan art guy. And they had reservations about whether or not I would be cool, whether I could keep my cool, whether I would be a big, silly fan, which I am. So I went in and I performed for them and they went, oh no, okay, he's legit. He's a legit performer. He is out there doing it. So they cast me and I've been working with them ever since. And I still, you know, I'll still be on stage in the wings, about to enter the scene, watching those guys on the stage. And I'll still think to myself, God, do you remember Edinburgh? Do you remember when I remember where I sat. I remember sitting, watching that play for the first time. And never dreaming that I would be next to walk on. I would be in the wings, ready to go and to join them. It's nice.
Oh, I love that story. That's beautiful. I love that you had the guts to be like, you know what? I'm such a big fan. I'm gonna make art, first of all, do my thing. And then for you to like walk into the audition room and be like, I want to do this. I can do this. I feel like a lot of people would be too nervous or intimidated to step into a situation like that, but you did, and it's paid off, Jack.
I just felt this. I saw what they were doing, and I said, oh, I'm there was five of them. And I thought, I'm your sixth member. You don't know it. You don't know me. They all went to uni together. And I thought, well, you don't know me. You don't know me at all. But I promise you, I'm number six. I think what I've got in me is exactly right for what you guys are out there doing. All of their references, everything that made them the theatre makers they are the exact same references that made me the theatre maker that I am. I just knew it going in. So I'm glad that I was vindicated and it paid off.
You absolutely were. Wait, do you have any like dream roles or dream shows that you'd love to be in?
It's tough. I used to be like, oh, I want to do everything, and then the longer things go on, I think the more attracted I am to the new. I also feel like it's my duty as someone with a lot of creative ideas to give. I'm not clay that can be put into a stencil. I have a lot to give, and I think a lot of it's good. So I think I'm intrigued by being on the ground floor for some stuff. And then when it comes to stuff that already exists, my problem is I always want to direct it. I always want to
like with Phantom.
Yeah, I always have ideas. There's always stuff that I want to throw at it. I always end up with a vision, and I think, oh, this should be done, and this should be done in this way. Yeah, I'm very excited about what's going to happen going forward. I've been attached to Mincemeat for the best part of a decade, and now I'm ready to flex some muscles that I don't get to use. My agent said to me, what's the next thing you want to do? And I said, I really want to do a play, because I didn't train in musical theater. I trained in acting. So I really kind of want to flex some of those muscles. And I said, ideally, I would like to do a play where I could make an omelet on the set. Like, I want to do something that is so naturalistic, so grounded and so real that there is a real kitchen that if I wanted, I could make an omelet on that set. That's what appeals to me, because I've been playing cartoonish for 7 years, so I really want to do something very real.
Yes, like Jez Butterworth vibes, you know, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Or Oh Mary, come on, I'll do it. Fine, I'll do Oh Mary. I'm dying to do it. It's great.
You have to.
It just looks so fun.
Yes.
It looks so much fun.
I could see you playing every role too. So I'm like,
yeah, fine. I'll be anybody in it. I don't mind. It looks like they are having the best time, and I've seen it a few times. And each time I've been backstage to talk to the cast, and it looks like they're having the best time, and they are. They're all having fun. They're all having a great time.
Yeah, I mean, you could do it here, but it's obviously across the pond now too. So
yeah, so there's options, which is interesting. Yeah, I as soon as I saw it, I was like, I put my people on it. I was like, yeah, no, that looks like a really good time. I'd love to join in the game.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Now, you also mentioned that you're writing musicals by day. I'm not asking you to spill any secrets, but what can you tell us just about your process? Or are you working alone, or is this a collaborative process?
It's collaborative. And so at the moment, I've been working with a wonderful composer called Alexander Sage Oyen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's everybody knows Alex. This has been one of my fun things, that the more I work with him, and I go and I meet other people in the city, they're like, oh yeah, Alex, yeah, everybody knows him. He's great. We are writing a musical. I can't really say what it is, because it's a true story. It's about people that are still alive. And we haven't asked them for the rights yet, because the story is a little bit of a trauma for the people involved. It's like a weird, fun, fascinating, interesting story. But then if you zoom out, you go, well, actually, it was a pretty tough time for those at the center of it. And what we didn't want to do is go to them and say, we want to make a musical, because that would completely alienate everybody. So what we've done is we've written four songs, and I've written a hell of a load of scenes. So I'm on book and lyrics, and Alex is on music and lyrics. And we have just literally about 3 days ago, like, pressed done on the songs and the scenes. We've made the package, and we're sending it out to some producers who are bigger and scarier than us, and asking them to try and talk these people into letting us have their life rights, and promising them that we're trying to do this respectfully, and for a reason. There has to be a reason that it's a musical, and I think we have a good one. So I'm working on that. I also have a couple of, basically, I've spent the entire time in New York feeling the most creative I've ever felt. And every day I go, do you know what would be a good musical? This. And I keep discovering new musicals. So the trick at the moment is deciding what threads to pull. So I have a couple of collaborators in the UK that I'm excited to get home and throw some ideas around with. But yeah, at the moment, the musical I'm writing with Alex Sejoyan has been what's taken up the most time. And I've surprised myself because I worked on Mincemeat. I'm not a accredited writer on Mincemeat, but I certainly helped, and I was sort of hired for that. You know, when we started, they were like, "What do you know about musicals? What can you tell us?" And I was like, "I know everything. Let's go."
Yeah.
So to use this year to go, okay, I'm officially gonna call myself a writer for real, and I'm gonna work on something of my own, has been very eye opening. It's proved to me that I have more in me than I thought, and that I have a lot to give and to put down on the page. It's been very fun.
Oh, I love
That's
this.
Fantastic. Well, congrats on finishing it. I mean, just under the wire here before you're heading back over the pond. How poetic is that?
I know.
That's amazing.
Yeah. We talk all year, and then I think in the last month we've gone, okay, we need to really do everything.
A little pressure helps, but that feels like so right that thread is kind of being tied up for now. I love it. Okay, question for you about these life rights and these people. Has this story ever been adapted before, or would you be the first one?
Yes.
It has. Okay.
These are some clues now. It was a podcast series. It was an investigative podcast series, and then it was a TV series. Just one series of that told the story, and then now it should be a musical. So I'm hopeful that they gave their life rights away once before, that they will do it again.
Wow, this is so exciting! I'm so happy for
you.
When we get off,
I can tell you what.
Okay. Oh, that's so exciting. Jack, I'm really excited for you because hearing about your interests and what gets your creative juices flowing, not that it's been like a trap to be in a Broadway show, you know, 8 times a week for the last year, but I can see how that could feel a little bit like you're ready to move on to the next thing because you just have so much creative energy coming out of you. So I think whatever's next is going to be amazing. It already sounds like you've got amazing things going. So this is going to be great. New York's going to miss you though.
Oh, I'm so going to miss New York. And I keep saying to people, you know, I spent the whole year trying to stay. I knew that there are visa stuff that needs to happen. I knew I was going to go straight for the green card and make that a thing. But then along the way, basically, I've had a lot of meetings of people who are like, loved your work, so interested to work with you. I have 10 ideas of what I could put you in today. Let me know when you've got that green card. So I'm like, right, okay. Yeah. So I keep saying to people, you know, listen, I didn't want to leave. And if you would like me to stay, please continue to shout my name all over town and write to your local Broadway theater producer and say, why the hell did you let Jack Malone go home?
Yeah.
I know.
Tony winner, Jack Malone.
Come on.
Yeah. But this is, that's also a big thing for me is I've had so much success and acclaim from this show, more than I ever could have dreamed. And I now hold the two most prestigious awards in theater, but I've only ever done one job, really. People have only ever seen Mincemeat. So I'm excited, but I also feel like I do have something to prove. I feel like there's a part of me that is ready to go out there and prove that it wasn't fluke and that it wasn't just a wonderfully written show and a well-written role and a well-created character and that I have something else to give. And if I don't, then I'll just go back and do Mincemeat again. Why not?
I mean, the inevitable reunion concert in 10 years.
There
but
will. Yeah,
it's not a fluke. It's not a fluke.
It's not. Did you guys film it with you in it, the five of you?
No, not nothing.
No? Oh.
I know. That's been quite a big thing for me because we've poured so much work into it. I really would love to see it filmed just so the thousands of hours of work that I put in is held, is captive. I think I don't think all theatre should be filmed at all. I think some things are meant to be, like for example, Masquerade, you can't film that anyway. There's no way. It's meant to be experienced. You have to experience it. Whereas Mincemeat, I think it should be filmed. I think they should try and, but it's just so damn expensive. It really is. It's a very, very costly business. So at the moment, no, it's not been filmed and there are no plans to film it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I heard it's cheaper to film it over in the UK. And because all of you are going back for now, maybe they can do it. There was that big rumor they were going to do that with Sunset Boulevard, even though they closed on Broadway.
They said that they were going to revive it, I think, for 6 weeks only. And the whole point was that they could film it. Maybe they're still going to. I happen to know that Tom Francis is an incredibly busy, busy man. So I'm like, if they're trying to do that, then they're going to have to pin him down because he's doing really well. He's had a wonderful flourish for his career. So I hope they do. Again, I think that's one that it's like, yeah, pin that show down. Let people know that what this was because it was something quite unique.
Oh,
Definitely.
so
Definitely.
unique for sure.
Yeah.
So did you meet Tom during like awards season the year before when y'all were in the West End?
Yeah, I remember saying when I got here and we started doing award season, I remember saying you couldn't have told my younger self that Nicole Scherzinger would be a recurring character in my life, like would heavily feature for like 3 years of my life, that I would just always, oh, there's Nicole, she's always in a room with me. So yeah, we did two award seasons together for Sunset Boulevard, and it was funny. There was a few like that. Dorian Gray, we did both of those seasons. Sarah Snook, I absolutely adore. All the Brits seemed to do our thing at the same time, which was really nice. Actually, it was nice to go, oh, good, a familiar face.
I'll bet. And we're all the better for it over here because we're all obsessed with you guys. So thank you. We are sadly having to wrap up here, and we're just so grateful for all your time and everything that you've given us Americans over the last year, Jack. You're seriously so lovely. But before we say goodbye, we do like to end with a dose of drama. Now, you've given us a lot today, but this could be a recommendation of something you've loved, something you're loving, something you want to recommend. We'll all share one. Connor, why don't you go
I
first?
mean, what I'm obsessed with is Love Story, the JFK Jr. and Carolyn Bessette show. I
Yes.
seriously am obsessed with it. It's so good. But, you know, it's a Ryan Murphy show. And I have to say, I also have been watching The Beauty, that new show that's like kind of like The Substance, but like make it TV. It's really good too. It's scary. Jack, you might
Is
like
it?
it. It's scary.
Yeah, I saw the poster for it, and I had the same. I thought, well, I've watched The Substance.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing. But I have. You're like the third person now who said, no, you would like it. So maybe I will.
I think you might. It's good. It's got a good cast and it's like The Substance, but of course has its own twists. And it explains a little bit more about what the actual substance is, because it's a disease, actually. Ooh.
Nice.
Anyway, so I do recommend it. I recommend The Beauty and I recommend Love Story. Dylan, what's your dose of drama today?
I think the only thing I haven't mentioned yet in recording has been the Olympics, which I've watched bits and pieces here and there, and always, find new Olympian crushes. But I will say my favorite thing about the Olympics is seeing people just living their dreams, something that they've worked towards forever, and how emotional it is. Like I was watching it today at the gym and it was on mute, and I was getting emotional watching these people stepping up to podiums and accepting, awards, and it's a really magical thing. And so maybe I'm just getting older and I'm just proud of people I've never even met before, but I love
No,
it
it's
so
so
much.
amazing. It's so amazing.
Yeah.
For real. Do you have a dose of drama?
I do. Mine is not current at all. Mine is like we're going back to the 60s and 70s here. Grey Gardens. I still will take the opportunity to shout about Grey Gardens whenever I can, because I still encounter people who have no concept of it, because it is this tiny obscure dot in American history. And it's funny, we were talking about
Yeah.
the love story thing, because that's the Kennedys and that's all wrapped up. It is Jackie Kennedy's cousins, Edith, Big Edie and Little Edie Bouvier Beale. And they were aristocratic royalty who through the exact right set of circumstances were left destitute and penniless. And then one day these documentary filmmakers sort of found like came upon them in their dilapidated mansion where they lived with 50 cats and a rabid raccoon, and filmed them over the course of one summer and watched what their life was. And that to me, I discovered that when I was a teenager, and that has been seminal in my truly in like the way I live my life, with resilience and sort of unwavering belief in my ability to not only live authentically but like thrive authentically and feel good and correct in my own skin and my own choices. I owe so much to those long since dead old ladies who just went dotty in an old mansion
Yes.
in the Hamptons. So whenever somebody says, what's something that you fixate on, it's always Grey Gardens. I'm always three thoughts away from thinking about Grey
I
Gardens.
love
So
that.
that's mine. If you haven't seen it, I always say to people, if you haven't seen it and you want to know more about me, you want to understand me a little better, watch Grey Gardens and it'll give you some insights.
Oh, I love that recommendation. It is so good. So good. Do you like the musical?
Yes, perfect.
Yeah.
They nailed it. They absolutely, again, one I want to direct. I want to direct it at Regent's Park Open Air Theatre. I think that's one that needs an open air production,
Oh
definitely.
my goodness. I love the way they say
Yes.
mother darling.
Mother darling, she has this old Yankee drawl that doesn't really exist anymore. Sometimes I meet people and I go, oh, you've got a touch of the little Edies in the way you talk. It's wonderful.
Jinx Monsoon, of course, you know,
Yeah,
she's got it. Oh my God. Well, Jack, it's been so nice to get to know you and to get to chat, especially during this extremely exciting week in your life that coming up. Oh my God. Best of luck with everything. Break a leg this week and soak it all up. It's going to be great.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been so lovely to chat.
We're going to definitely have to check out whatever you've got going on in the West End next time we cross the pond, too.
Yeah, let me know. Let me know. Connor, I owe you a free ticket or two.
You owe me nothing. You owe me nothing. And everybody's got to follow you on Instagram. You're at Jack Malone underscore, right?
Yes, yeah, that's me.
Yes.
You can see what I'm up to. You can see my dogs. I've just started a Substack. I'm sharing loads of my writing. I'm writing like I've written a few articles and stuff, but I'm also writing fiction and most of it is horror. So yeah, please do follow along because we're having a lot of fun on Instagram at the moment.
Beautiful.
And while everyone is following Jack, they've got to follow us. We're at the Drama Podcast. Connor is at Connor McDowell. I am at Dylan McDowell. And Connor, I will see you next time. Drama.
Drama.